This week on the According to Sources podcast, with marijuana set to go fully legal in Canada on October 17th, all eyes were fixated on the cannabis space this week. What events lie on the horizon to either further validate or devalue this space? I sit down with Navy Capital's Sean Stiefel to discuss it all. I'm Mike Samuels, founder of Broome Street Capital, and this is According to Sources for the week of September 23rd, 2018.
It's crossing the tape right now. Let me explain what's happening here.
Some breaking news to share with you this morning, M&A related.
There's good activism.
I think eBay is in that situation. They got a jewel in PayPal.
There's bad activism.
Unfortunately, JCPenney was a dying company.
Examples of activism gone awry.
It was not a surprise to me that that deal fell through.
This is such a game changer.
Hello and welcome to According to Sources, a podcast that devotes its time to the discussion of M&A, activism, event trading, and the sources that surround and cover them all. It seemed like Tilray was the only stock on anyone's radar this week. And while I try to focus on M&A and merger arb, even I made an unfortunate donation to that trade on the short side. It was hard to resist. When Constellation Brands took a stake in Canopy Growth last month, it changed the way this sector has been viewed ever since. And to get a better understanding of the space and the players in it, I sat down with Navy Capital's Sean Stiefel. His fund was founded in 2014 specifically to participate in the cannabis sector. And we started the interview by simply addressing what made this past week of trading so wild and so unique. So this week, we were just talking about how this, it seemed like maybe it's because it was Yom Kippur, or maybe because earnings, and, you know, the quarter's winding down. There's not much going on, and it seemed like the whole world was focused on these pot stocks and the cannabis space. So when you're seeing these names go up, Tilray, Cron, Canopy, what's going through your head?
Without a doubt, and I sort of said this earlier this week, that there's not a lot of super themes out there, right? You had crypto as a super theme, autonomous cars is a super theme, cannabis is definitely a super theme that everyone can relate to personally, knows what it is. Difference here is cannabis is actually tangible. And so people now have been gravitating to the theme of cannabis, and there's a scarcity of ways to actually play that theme. So the three names you just mentioned, those are the most liquid, the most easy to trade. John Smith sitting in Kansas City can go on their E-Trade account, easily buy them. There's a lot of issues for some of the other names, specifically the CSE names or the five-letter OTC names for a lot of people. And so those three just kind of become an approximation for retail sentiment. You throw some headlines out about Coca-Cola, throw something out about Diageo, and now all of a sudden everyone's excited.
Right. But your fund, Navy, mm-hmm. is specifically designed to participate in the cannabis space. Is
Correct.
That fair?
Exactly.
So when you see stocks get really stretched like this, yeah. and I assume it's meant to participate mostly on the upside.
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah, we run for the most part almost 90% net long for the most part.
So then, I mean, how do you participate when these stocks get so far stretched that it's not even, it doesn't seem rational to own them?
So what's interesting is that people think this is kind of a one-off. I've seen moves like this probably five or six times since we started covering the sector. There was a day in November of 2016 where every single Canadian stock almost was limit halt up three times. So we've seen this before. We've seen this in Israel. We've seen this in Australia. The retail sentiment, when it picks up, can get crazy, but very much as crazy as it is to the downside, it can be even crazier. As crazy as it is to the upside, it can be even crazier to the downside, which is what you saw in January. If you look at January, only this week did some of these stocks get back to their January highs. So I think that you're going to have basically the air is going to come out and these stocks are going to retrace probably to a higher level than they were previously, but they're definitely going to come well off where they are on these highs.
Right. So, but specifically, like, how do you adjust your portfolio when this is happening?
We want to be selling into this for sure. And so a lot of our names that have doubled since the Constellation news, we think they're just too expensive. Not that we want to write them off and not be involved, but we have levels that we'll buy them back in. And then conversely, some of these names that are just outrageous become good shorts.
So you will participate on the short side?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, one of the trends that I'm noticing, like, I'm going to look back to one of the crazier things to me is that, you know, Chinese ADRs were delisting in the United States and relisting in China because they were just getting crazier yep. multiples. And in a weird way, we're seeing that happen with marijuana stocks.
100%.
Yeah. And so
it seems irrational in China, and yet it's working, and yet it's working in the United States as well. Is that going to be a trend that we're just going to keep seeing happening?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a few components to that trade. So right now, the CSE, which is effectively the third exchange of note in Canada, which allows for U.S.-listed cannabis companies, is so backed up, the cost of a shell to list on that in a reverse takeover is astronomical. There's 34 prospectuses on file for U.S. cannabis companies to list on the CSE, probably another 100 behind that. So this is getting crazy. People think that they can invest in a company at one multiple and just flip it out in the CSE at another multiple, or the next trade is going from Canada to the US. So whatever multiple is traded on sort of the CSE, TSX, TSX Ventures, you can then get even further juice out of it by getting on NASDAQ or NYSE. Or what you see now on some of these OTC stocks is you get a squeeze because people hear the word cannabis, people buy it and don't really know what they're buying.
Right. One of your colleagues at Navy said something to degree that this is like buying alcohol stocks before Prohibition ended, right? And, yeah. And you know, a problem I have with that analogy is Prohibition lasted 10 years, and we kind of had an idea of what alcohol sales were.
Mm.
But in this, we don't really know.
I'm less concerned about what the sales are. I'm more concerned about who actually is going to be making those sales. Because right now, what you have in Canada is a bunch of guys who, for the most part, have been commoditized farmers. You're talking about a very, very tiny medical market where there's not a lot of product differentiation. There's certainly strain differentiation, but for the most part, people are smoking flower, and that's not that easy to kind of keep your margin. So what's going to happen, what you've seen in Colorado, which is basically the world's most mature recreational market, is people need to pivot to value-add types of formats, edibles, oils, topicals, tinctures. And so in that pivot, if you can't maintain your quality and your brand, you're going to go out of business. So everyone right now is so excited about CBD water, or CBD Gatorade, right, or CBD in you name it. But the reality is you still need a good product. And think about how many people tried to launch a soda company. And so you're going to see a huge shakeout just because you're trying to do something. I mean, we've spoken to more celebrities than I can name who want to do a CBD line. And what does that mean? So there's a lot that has to be answered.
Going back to the Colorado thing, has anyone ever looked at or done a study on what happens to the black market when these places get legalized?
Yeah, the black market definitely falls off. What's actually more interesting right now is you're proving that it's totally fungible between the medicinal market and the recreational market. There is a caveat to that in Canada, which is that insurers will pay. So if you're getting it for free, you're obviously going to stay with your medical program. But the black market sales definitely still do happen, but there is a pretty substantial decline. It really comes down to quality and the offerings. And as more and more people pivot away from traditional raw flower and into edibles and some of the more kind of refined products, that also is a nice barrier to entry for, I guess, the legal sunlit market versus the black market. I can tell you in New York City, most drug dealers carry California legal product. They just shipped it here. So there's even a change in that regard where it's no longer a bunch of kind of seeded grass out of Mexico. They're just going to California and charging 2 or 3X, and it's a much easier process for them.
Right. When you see, I mean, these stocks are trading at such crazy multiples of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So is there, have we all come to sort of a consensus way to roadmap valuation in these?
The street certainly hasn't.
What are you guys using?
We use 19 or forward year EV to EBITDA. The street to justify Tilray, even in the 50s and 60s, is using 2020 revenue models, which to us, or revenue multiples, which to us is just crazy. I mean, not only are you baking in perfection of execution for 2 or 3 years, but you're talking about growth rates that just, they're impossible to model, that don't make any sense. And if you're telling me that something, you know, if you look at the Cowen model, that's 17 times 2020 revenue and a $62 target, and the stock got to 300. So now you're telling me it was almost 100 times 2020 revenue at one point. I mean, this has gotten somewhat out of hand, without a question.
Right. But I mean, is like, do you guys, for example, do you own Canopy?
We did, for sure.
But you won't own it here.
We would consider owning it if should things change materially, in the sense that they roll things out faster, they get some more distribution agreements. I think Canopy is a great company. I really believe that they're doing things exceptionally well. The problem I have is I just think a lot of the sector has gotten so hot. I don't think Canopy is crazily valued, but I think a lot of the sector is. And Canopy, in a lot of ways, represents kind of the beta of the sector. And so if you're going to own Canopy right now, barring anything strategic, which they're probably not going to announce, just given they just did Constellation, you're kind of at the whims of the sector. And as we can kind of talk about, these two ETFs control so much of the volume. When those go down, virtually everything goes down.
Right. It's, there's so many parallels between Bitcoin and these names. Like that Canopy is sort of Bitcoin, and Tilray might be Ethereum. And just the way that people are playing them, you remember like there was Coin Hoppers, yep. And now there seems to be Weed Hoppers, and they just keep going to these little names and the five tickers in Canada. And
yeah, I mean, we have kind of a saying in the office that there's companies and there's concepts. Bitcoin's a concept. You kind of have, you're betting on an idea that may or may not take hold, but these are companies that have payrolls, they have inventory, they have real metrics that they need to meet. And so you take a company like Tilray, which is so far behind a lot of its competitors in terms of how much cash they have on the balance sheet. Well, they're going to have real problems if they don't raise cash. They're already well behind, years behind some of these other guys who've been able to go public and do a $100 million bought deal overnight or whatever it might be. And so I look at that and I kind of say to myself, these are businesses at the, you know, at the end of the day. And if you can't produce a product, if you go online and read the reviews of Tilray's medicinal product, they had real shortages. And so how are you going to tell me you're going to scale that infinitely if right. you couldn't even maintain the tiny Canadian rec market and you have less cash than pretty much all your major competitors who are worth more than $1 billion?
So it seems like there's this wave to consolidate grow capacity. And I guess what I'm asking is there like a, is this a zero-sum game at this point where there's a finite amount of cannabis able to be grown and so they're just snatching it all up?
I think there's two ways to look at it. I think day one of Canadian recreational marijuana, which is October 17th, you are only really allowed to sell two things, raw flower and then low concentrate oil. So we know that there's not enough supply in the market to meet kind of the early demand. However, in middle of 2019, that really changes. You're going to have a ton of supply come online, which is obviously going to create a pricing pressure. And as we just talked about, when you're only selling raw flower and low concentrate oil, it's very hard to differentiate. And so there will be pricing pressure in 2019. The next phase of this trade and where things get more interesting is when Canada allows other products, which is theoretically 1 year from October 17th. And so in that point in time, it becomes advantageous to have a very low oversupplied cannabis market because all you're doing is extracting the CBD and the THC and putting it into an end product.
Right.
So that if you look at California, edibles, for example, are gaining margin, margin as a percentage of their sales versus flower, which, you know, every day the price of flower comes down effectively.
Right. I guess what I get confused about is the more that it becomes mainstream, the more that, let's say, if New York passes it and other places pass it, I compare it to, let's say, there was no oil, you couldn't drill oil in the U.S., and then suddenly you could.
Yep.
The price of oil would crash.
Correct.
But that no one seems to be thinking about that factor.
Yeah, I mean, everyone points to Oregon and Washington where the price of flower, it's basically operating at kind of the marginal break-even level. I mean, people are not making money growing flower for the most part up there. Where it gets interesting, though, is branding. At the end of the day, and that's where we're spending most of our time on focus, is branding and distribution. That, to us, is where you can build a moat, you can have IP, you can actually justify why my product should be $7 versus yours is $3, whatever it might be. And that's where this is going. At the end of the day, flower is going to be pretty ubiquitous, as is kind of these vape carts that you see everywhere. I mean, obviously, there's better vape carts and better flower, but for the most part, it's going to be everywhere.
Right. So this podcast in particular, I try to focus on M&A and events.
Yep.
And so let's go there for a second. Obviously, the Constellation investment in Canopy was the biggest event in this space. And, you know, part of me was thinking, oh, this is a huge validation for the industry. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, well, Canopy's selling $4 billion worth of equity at 37. And they're not dumb. So, you know, does that also put a ceiling on sort of valuation in some way?
In a way, which I sort of alluded to earlier, Canopy has their date already. So for them, Constellation and Canopy are effectively the same. Constellation has the rights to 51% of Canopy. No one can then come in over that, really. So you have a situation where Canopy is wedded. A lot of these other guys are trying to find their date to the dance, and we know that every alcohol company, every tobacco company, for the most part, every pharmaceutical company is looking at what to do here. So we think there'll be more strategic investments. However, what has also happened is things don't really make sense right now. You're not going to go invest in Tilray, which at $15 billion or whatever the market cap is at the close on Friday, you want to put $1 billion or two to work. You're buying 10% of that company. Or you can go out and acquire a CanTrust, Hydropothecary, Organigram, companies like that, that for $1 billion or two, you can take the whole thing. And again, since there's no branding, why are you paying up for these things when the actual book value or the limited sort of infrastructure is only worth a fraction of their already kind of inflated market caps?
Right. So where would you guys say, hey, let's put on some Tilray here?
I think it's hard to – we liked Tilray at the IPO price at 17, and then we sold it at 30 and actually went short right after the IPO from 30 down to 20, and that was a great trade. If you look at Tilray's funding capacity, it doesn't make any sense what the market cap is. If you look at their cash position, it doesn't make any sense. They need cash. You look at these press releases they put out about all these countries. Well, none of that really matters because at the end of the day, that's less than 5% of their total revenue. Then you go out and you look at kind of what they did with importing cannabis, and it's like they basically sent a few pills to one university research that it doesn't even have the trial design down.
Right.
So I don't even
think that was one of the more frustrating things for the shorts to even understand why this was happening. That seemed like that fueled the last leg of the whole thing.
Yeah, that made no sense because, you know, there are a lot of companies conducting cannabis research. There's hundreds of trials going on. And no one really has economics. We don't know if Tilray even has $1 of economics, if they're even getting paid for the product they sent, which at the end of the day, even if they were getting full retail, is only a few thousand bucks.
Right. You mentioned earlier that Aurora, and there was rumors about the CBD partnership with Coca-Cola. You know, how much of that is just headline, and how much do you think that's a big deal?
I do think it's a big deal. I kind of joke. I travel all over the world to see the same executives from the same sort of multinational CPG companies. Some of the ones you named, some of other ones that people aren't really thinking about yet on the cosmetic side, like Revlon and Estee Lauder. And so as these people understand that the CBD has tremendous benefits, the biggest issue is that we can't prove those benefits. And scientifically, there's not enough evidence to support a lot of these health claims. So it's right now it kind of falls more into like a nutraceutical type category. But what we're going to get for sure is waters, juices, cosmetics, fragrances, all derived from cannabinoids. CBD, because it does not have a psychoactive effect, is probably the first horse to fall. Especially now that we think the hemp farm bill is going to get passed in the near future. So all these things become much more interesting. And again, what the hemp farm bill or states act is going to do, it's going to make the value of the Canadians who haven't really run as far as they should have, given they had this window of no real competition out of the U.S. The U.S. companies are going to just rip right up because right. People are going to understand that they can operate legally. CBD is going to most likely be allowed to go intrastate. It kind of already is. And be shipped internationally. So why are you going to go to Canada? It's not that economic to grow anything in Canada. And our good friend Mitch McConnell in Kentucky is really excited to get fields and fields of hemp and ship that all over the world.
Right. What's Trump's view, do you think, of the whole space? And does it even matter?
I think that twofold. I think Trump and what we hear from our consultants in Washington is somewhat indifferent towards the space. It seems like he's relatively supportive of the medicinal aspects of cannabis. But what we do know for certain is Trump likes jobs. He likes economic growth. And Trump likes the ability to give people what they want. At the end of the day, Trump is a great showman. No matter what your political view of him is, he's a great showman. And so we believe if there's any hiccups leading up to the election, he's got this ace in the hole of legalization or at least the federal detente. And I have a really hard time believing he's not going to play that card. So you see the jobs. You look at a state like Connecticut that has a huge deficit that's hemorrhaging companies like GE and Aetna. What are they going to do to replace that tax revenue? This is such a no-brainer for any politician right now. You see these opiate replacement bills going up everywhere. Mm-hmm. Illinois just passed. How do you not address that when we have almost a unilateral consensus in this country about what the problems are? And obviously people like to pound their chests on job growth and the economy.
Right. Going back to Constellation for a second, all these names are going parabolic, and yet it's not a pure play, but Constellation can't get off the ground. Like the stock got punished when they made the acquisition. Canopy's gone up, you know, 40% since then. Yep. Nobody wants to own it. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, at the end of the day, this is only even fully diluted. You're still talking about a quarter of Constellation's market cap, right? So it's not going to be a one-for-one trade with Canopy going up, theoretically.
Right, but it's acted entirely the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the existing investor base of Constellation or any beer companies out there or alcohol companies just don't understand yet what the opportunity set for cannabis is. And so they see big numbers, $5 billion is a big number, it's a big percentage of Constellation's market cap, but they don't understand what the opportunity set is. It's really hard, especially, you know, us East Coast guys sitting in New York, to really understand when cannabis is normalized, that instead of going out with a broker for a beer, you could just go out for a cannabis beverage or a pre-roll. All of this stuff will be normalized in a matter of time. Canada is going to give us a nice blueprint pretty soon.
Right. What do you think about why Big Tobacco hasn't gotten involved in this?
They're definitely dabbling. I mean, you saw Alliance One change their name, bought a Canadian LP. You saw Imperial made an investment in the UK into cannabinoid research. I actually think the issue is that Big Tobacco, it's not as threatened as alcohol. Tobacco users use it for a very specific reason. Cannabis doesn't really compete with that. Cannabis gives you more of a recreational competitor to alcohol than it does for tobacco. And likewise, I think a lot of the people, especially the early movers in cannabis, don't want the association with tobacco and cigarettes at all. And so you see that and you say, all right, if my business isn't really that affected, also, how damaging would it be for a brand that's cannabis is trying to pitch itself as this health and wellness movement? Well, now you just kind of signed yourself up with someone who, you know, is being sued for, has to basically retain profits for potential lawsuits.
That's right. But I mean, that idea of like it's taking share from alcohol, like in your heart of hearts, do you believe that?
100%.
Really?
I believe it personally. Yeah.
I mean, you went to college. You live in New York. People aren't. It's not one or the other.
I don't agree with that. I think that if you have empirically, there's a 15% decline where it's legal in alcohol usage. I think about what does cannabis offer? No calories, no hangover, and the ability to curate an experience. If you and I take 20 shots of tequila or drink 10 bottles of wine, we're getting drunk. That's kind of drunk is drunk. I mean, maybe a little different for some people, but with cannabis, you can get something that helps you study, that helps you party, that helps you sleep, that helps with your romantic endeavors. There's a lot of different things that the cannabinoids can do for people. The biggest issue is the science. Just
what's the romantic endeavors part?
There's a lot of people who believe it helps with their sex life. You know, a lot of people are marketing products, lubricants, or even just various cannabinoid and strains that are out there that people believe makes them rowdy.
What about like the infrastructure part of it? Like the, you know, for a very brief amount of time, Scott's Miracle-Gro was sort of anointed the way to play it through infrastructure, for lack of a better word. Are there names that people aren't focusing on that are sort of, you know, much like with the gold rush, they're selling the picks sure. and the shovels?
Yeah, I caveat this by saying I'm on the board of Grow Generation. Grow Generation is one of the largest hydroponics supply chains in the country, and so growing cannabis is pretty technical. It's not an easy thing to grow. Everyone just thinks it's a weed and it's easy to grow. That's actually not true, especially when you talk about more of the harder to grow strains. And so you think about, why is Sherwin-Williams successful in the context of Home Depot? You would think anyone would go buy their paint at Home Depot. But the reality is, when you're dealing with something very technical, you want expertise, you want help, you want to say, hey, if I angle these lights in a certain way, should I change the lights? Should I change the temperature, the humidity? And GrowGen and companies like that offer that kind of technical expertise, where it's not worth it anymore to go to Home Depot because they don't know how to help you increase your yields.
Right.
So that's a huge component. We think that obviously extraction is a huge component. People are spending millions of dollars on these.
When you say extraction, like the oil extraction?
To get from the actual plant to either oils or just to remove the cannabinoids and put them into other things. These are big pieces of expensive machinery. That's really interesting. And then obviously all of this stuff, because it's so regulated by the government, you need tremendous tracking and software, payments, logistics, the ability to actually move cash, things like that. And because it's cannabis, a lot of the incumbents aren't touching it. So you have actually chance, whether you're a payments company, a lighting company, or a software company, to really get some scale and escape velocity, because none of the incumbents in those industries are willing to touch this yet.
Right. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, how Navy got started. How did it get into your head? I want to start this Candos fund.
Sure. So I started Navy in 2014 as a tech fund, ran it effectively as such until the middle of 2016. And I get a call from a Canadian broker who literally says, if you like making money, take this meeting, which is one of the better sales pitches.
Yeah.
It's nice and concise. We took the meeting. Lo and behold, Juan Sartori walks in, and Juan, who's running this Uruguayan cannabis company, starts to give his pitch. Uruguay, of course, being the first country in the world to go fully recreationally legal. We're sitting there, kind of, you know, half of it was pure entertainment to have a cannabis company come through the office, and at a time neither of us had ever really thought about it. And we're sitting there, and by the third page of the deck, we're like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? These numbers are absolutely astounding. We invested at a $40 million valuation pre-IPO. 4 or 5 months later, we're out at $160 million. And just coincidentally, that company last week was acquired by Aurora for $280 million. And we kind of said to ourselves, what the heck's going on here? We need to learn as much as we can, as fast as we can. And I do think having a background in more kind of small cap growth tech helped to kind of understand, like, hey, there's a real opportunity set in hockey stick growth. And so we spent a lot of time in 2016 going all over the world, Israel, Australia, Europe, Canada, to understand what is the opportunity set. And by the end of the year, we came to the conclusion that the growth of cannabis was the highest conviction idea of our lifetime. But how do you monetize that? So right. We spent a ton of time thinking about the structure, private equity versus public equity, US versus Canada versus global. And we came to a conclusion that a global long short public equity focused fund was the best mechanism. And I say that now because you have this crazy dynamic where venture investing, private investing, public investing all sort of blend together here. We can say we're going to IPO this podcast on the CSE in 6 months. The listing requirements to list on the CSE are nothing like the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. And so that's why you see this flood.
So you think we should do it?
Yeah, if we can get 100 times 2020 revenue, why wouldn't we?
I'll let you know when I get revenue.
Just get a dollar. It's a nice multiple.
What about, just like in blockchain and Bitcoin, like you're going to have like the Long Island iced tea company that turns into the Long Island blockchain. Yep. In this space, and you're going to have a ton of frauds. So how do you spot a fraud?
In this space, I think what's been good so far, at least for us, has been there's so much government regulation and there is a lot of data about the companies that you invest in. So you can actually see a lot of these claims with your own eyes. Generally speaking, as a rule for our fund, we won't invest in a company unless we physically go see the company and meet the management team, because it's impossible to know if someone's telling the truth, whether telling the truth, period. But let's just take that for granted. How are we going to model out 80% growth versus 100% growth versus 150% growth? I mean, these are astronomical assumptions. You need to go and see and understand. And so for us in Canada specifically, the ability to say it's no longer can you grow cannabis? There will be a lot of cannabis supplied, but where are you selling? What are you selling? At what price are you selling? How defensible is that? And then as we kind of pivot to the next phase of this trade, which is who has actually brands that people want to buy, you need to get the data. And so there is a lot of tangible ways to check what people say. I would caution against anybody who buys a stock purely because the word cannabis or something is mentioned, or CBD. And so
can you patent a strain?
So there hasn't been defensible IP as it relates to the genetics themselves yet. However, the Israeli government, for instance, is using CRISPR technology to actually put into the RNA what that strain is and that it's owned by the government. So you're going to start seeing that proliferate. We just made an investment in a company called Field that has a great relationship with Skittles. Skittles is one of the best known strains and brands across the world. And so
we're not talking about the candy.
No, it's Skittles with a Z. And so what you have to worry about, the same way that Louis Vuitton has to worry about the knockoffs being sold on Fifth Avenue, is people are trying to knock these guys off because they think they know people know Skittles or Gorilla Glue or Blue mm-hmm. Dream, whatever it might be. And people are trying to pitch it as exactly that, even though it's not the same.
Well, it's almost like if it becomes truly medicinal and it's used in, you know, vastly in biotech, for example, then the strain will matter a lot.
Correct. And that's why GW Pharma, it took them 20 years to get to this point. I mean, they had to prove that they could supply a consistent product. And a lot of that comes from the genetics and how they actually propagate their plants. So without a doubt, the strain will matter. I think that this strain matters only in the sense that every strain represents a unique composition of the cannabinoids beneath it. We don't know necessarily today. Most scientists can talk about 5 or 6 cannabinoids. The Israelis can maybe go 20 deep. But we don't know what cannabinoid 21 to 200 does for you or what it could do for you. And so, you know, people have sort of looped this whole thing into a term called the entourage effect, where people are like, oh, that strain works for me because of the entourage effect. Well, we don't know that. Maybe their cannabinoid 122 had some effect that works for your irritable bowels.
Or what's the entourage effect?
It's you take every cannabinoid in a strain, which we think is around 200 different cannabinoids, and the way those work together addresses a certain ailment, treatment, gives you a certain high, whatever it might be. But it's really just a vast generalization to say there's something in this plant that we don't know what it is that helps you.
Right.
And that this strain's a little different than the next strain. Even if the THC and CBD components are the exact same, there's still another 198 cannabinoids in there that may have a different profile to you, either as a recreational user, medicinal user, and we get more and more into kind of the biotech side and actually disease treatment.
Right. I feel like we're only hearing about the beverage end. But, I mean, if you go into any of these stores, they sell salad dressings and gummy bears and lollipops, all this stuff. So is there a company that you think is – I mean, why isn't Kraft partnering with Canopy and going to sell salad dressing?
I think that a lot of it comes from just companies are afraid, and also the regulatory environment makes it very difficult. Even CBD, which is still under UN charter, as is THC, obviously, it's hard for a multinational company to dabble just yet. We do believe, though, that they will. And, we go to every conference from Tel Aviv to Sydney, and it's the same multinational CPG guys thinking about what to do here. And, yeah, it will happen without a doubt. But people right now don't want to compromise their integrity of their business if there's still any legal or regulatory risk. And you have a shareholder base that's pension funds, teachers' funds, endowments, whatever. Or if you're a university, you might lose federal funding. There's a whole sort of issues around this right now that people don't want to step in front of.
Right. Right. All right. Well, I end every interview by asking 5 questions.
Sure.
All right. So here we go. Question 1. We've been talking about weed the entire time, but if you could only have one cocktail for the rest of your life, what would it be?
An old fashioned.
Okay. Question 2. What's your worst habit in terms of trading or managing money?
Sometimes when I am down big in a position, I just stare at it for the entire day. So I think, like anybody else, it's very hard to mentally distance yourself from losers.
Right. Sure. If you could pick anyone's brain for an hour on investing, who would it be?
I really like, I guess it's a tough one. I like the things I see from Tiger Global and Chase Coleman. I would love to get in a room with him and see, because, I think a lot of the parallels to what Tiger was able to do during the internet age and ride that successfully and become the most strategic investor on the other end of it, I would like to emanate. And so I look at Chase Coleman, I look what he's built at Tiger Global, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him.
Right. I guess, I was thinking about this earlier, there's always like a spotlight fund. There's a spotlight fund for Bitcoin. There was a spotlight fund during the .com. And so now Navy kind of is getting a lot of attention for pot. And sometimes they flame out and sometimes they don't. And so, are you guys still raising money? What's going on with Navy specifically?
Yeah, we are definitely still raising money. We think that if we were to deploy our portfolio today from approximately $100 million, we could verbatimly do so to about $500 million just because of the liquidity that's come into the sector. The opportunity set on the U.S. private side is the most robust we've ever seen. I mean, we have a whiteboard in the office of just deals that we're looking at, and we're constantly passing on good deals because we think there's more great deals out there. I think for us, it's imperative to exactly what I just said Tiger Global was able to do out of the kind of the .com era, which is keep your head above water, become a strategic value add investor that people seek out, which I believe we are doing a good job of presenting ourselves in that manner and getting a lot of really interesting deal flow because people want to work with us. And I think if we can keep doing these things, and obviously returns help, but at the end of the day, understanding the sector better, faster, and more thoroughly than anybody else will help us stay in that pole position, even though you know that billions of dollars are pouring into the sector and we're not a $1 billion fund. We think we will continue to grow, but more importantly, we'll be a more value-add investor for a lot of these companies.
Got it. Question 4. You could have dinner with anyone, living or dead. Who would it be?
Larry David.
Any reason why?
I like to laugh. He would be a pretty good guy to make me laugh.
And then last question, gun to your head. I have to ask this.
Yeah.
Your most undervalued company in cannabis, and let's say throw Tilray out, the most overvalued company in cannabis.
So undervalued, I think one that's really interesting that no one really knows about because it just listed is Charlotte's Web. Charlotte's Web is the first real brand to be listed.
Is this just listed in Canada?
Just listed about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
It just got its U.S. OTC ticker this Monday. I think as people learn about that and learn about the brand and learn about the things that Charlotte's Web's doing on the CPG side and outside the U.S. and North America, it's a really interesting stock that still trades at kind of the low teens EBITDA on a 19 basis. Compare that to anything else, it's pretty cheap. And again, it's just totally underfollowed. So that's one that we really like. That's overvalued. I mean, the whole space right now, it's, you know, when things double in a month, pretty much across the board or more than double in a month, you're looking at the whole sector as being pretty overvalued. For us, I mean, it's really hard to say that Tilray stands out in a world of its own where nothing compares to that valuation. I mean, it just makes no sense versus anything else. I think you've got a pretty...
I feel like Tilray was like a once in 10 year sort of outlier.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just... I mean, and it was beyond... I mean, that had to be some sort of manipulation along the way as well.
I mean, look, I think the CEO going on TV with the stock where it was, it was one of the more irresponsible things I've seen. I mean, it reminds me of Dry Ships and Riot and Long Island Blockchain. And those are... And you have an intentionally low-floated stock. There's big problems, and the company needs to raise cash. There's this huge privateer shareholder base that has to come out of the stock at some point, as well as there's a private placement from January that was low teens, I believe, and those guys get unlocked in mid-October. And so you have – it was just a very bizarre sequence of events coupled with this kind of mania that we saw in the last few weeks since Constellation – So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it was kind of like a 30 Sigma type event.
It was insane. But outside of Tilray, is there a stock that you're short that you guys think has a significant downside?
For us, in this point, it's just so hard to take the – one, it's really hard to get borrow. So every morning we send a list of almost 100 tickers to our prime. If 10 of them come back with borrow, that's a good day. I mean, just from a perspective of is there borrow.
Sure.
Then of those 10, only maybe 3 have borrow rates less than 20%.
Yep.
And so you have this dynamic where it's really, really hard to be short anything because you need the stock to come down so much to justify the rate that you're paying. All the while, you have all of this kind of asymmetric risk of strategic partnerships or macro headlines. And so shorting stocks for us is very difficult to do in this environment of this sort of rising tide lifting all ships. And that being said, if you think about what are the risks to shorts, look, valuations for everyone are stretched, but some people still have some of this takeout risk or, more importantly, the strategic partnership risk. The only stock that doesn't have that anymore is Canopy. And so to the extent that you wanted to have a hedge on the overall index, Canopy makes sense. However, it is a good company. They've got a $5 billion war chest. The CEO is effectively a rock star.
Mm.
And so, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, now what's next? And then you're kind of, there's just not enough liquidity or borrow to really go that far out. And so, you know, I think hedging with the ETFs, MJ in the US or HMMJ in Canada are a great way to really express some sort of risk mitigation and take down some exposure.
Got it. Sean, thanks again, man.
Yeah, thank you for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Sean Stiefel from Navy Capital. If you have any questions for Sean or anything happening at Navy, please email them at ir@navycapital.com. Listen, this space is definitely out of my comfort zone. It's not really what I do, but I felt the need to educate myself on what's going through the minds of the people that are trading it. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter as I sometimes update my positions and opinions in real time. My handle is @AccordToSources, that's ACCORDTO sources, and my email is michael@accordingtosourcespodcast.com. This has been the According to Sources podcast for the week of September 23rd. I'll see you next week. As a reminder, today's podcast is not investment advice, but is the opinions of According to Sources, Broome Street Capital, and Michael Samuels. These parties cannot be held liable for any losses taken as a result of actions based on the ideas presented in this podcast today.